The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, it's part two of a special Mammoth BS Report with my friend Dave Damashek. In part one, we discussed hockey. We saved the NHL. We figured out the TiVo crisis. We figured out how to prevent people from texting you during games on cell phones. We figured out how to make urinals and troughs more efficient. Mm-hmm. And now, part two, we're going to talk about the Game 7s. Orlando-Boston. Lakers-Houston.
Wonderful.
First question.
Let me also say, I hate to plug, but ESPN.com page 2, the daily podcast for Damashek.
Damashek on Demand.
Yes, thank you.
There you go. The Lakers, we live in Los Angeles. Even if they win this series, have they been besmirched by the lack of killer instinct and rolling over in Game 4 and Game 6 when they had a chance to close these teams out?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, something that seemed like a foregone conclusion to me, and it seems like probably 95% of anybody else who watches the NBA, is that it seemed the inevitability was going to be the L.A. Kobe's versus the Cleveland LeBrons, and now I legitimately can see the Nugs knocking them off. The one thing I will say is, though, I think the matchup specifically against the Nugs, who is checking Kobe? Let's assume, I do think that the Lakers are going to knock off the Rockets on Sunday, right? Do you see any way that the Rockets come back here? I think that it was a victory for them to do what they did last night, to do what they did on Thursday night to the
Feels Lakers. Like a 35-point win for LA.
Yeah, I agree with that. But still, I think that it is going to be the Nuggets. And now with that front line, Nene and Kmart and everybody else against, you know, Gasol. I do think it's a little unfair to Gasol. Bynum is the guy who's the letdown. And now you're sort of asking Pau Gasol to be tough and be rugged up front. It's sort of like saying the equivalent with the Dodgers now. Manny Ramirez is out and Juan Pierre's out there. And they're saying, hey, Juan Pierre, why don't you start hitting home runs like Manny? Like, you know, you're in left field for the Dodgers. You have to do the same thing that position is that's expected out of that position.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I just don't think that they have depth up front, and I think it's exposed. And then the other thing is Deron Williams or Rajon Rondo can maybe torture point guards. But Aaron Brooks just can't do it. You can't feel good about your point guard defense if Aaron Brooks is doing what he's doing to you.
They had some weaknesses that I weren't sure were even going to pop up in this playoffs. They popped up a lot sooner than I thought. Point guard defense. Really bad. 3-point shooting, totally erratic. The two toughest guys in the team are Fisher and Kobe. That's not a good sign. Mm-hmm. You never want your guards to be the two toughest guys in your team. Jeff Van Gundy pointed it out when I had my own podcast. I was like, you know what? He's right. Like, I mean, this is a team that last year we saw collapse against Celtics because they weren't tough enough and that the Celtics were just able to take them out.
Right.
That toughness hasn't really increased. I'm not sure how many of these guys I want to go to war with. You know, look at what the Celts are doing in these first two rounds. Say what you want about these guys, but they're all guys you want to go to war with. They're not that talented because they're too banged up, but they're all fighters. How many fighters are on this Lakers team?
Well, I think it's interesting to think about the Houston Rockets. They've lost, obviously, Yao, and then the series before that, they lost to Kimbe, and they still have more depth up front than what the Lakers have. It's almost, you know Mitch Kupchak deserves praise for stealing Gasol and getting Ariza, and Shannon Brown's been a nice piece. But really, in hindsight, what was the thinking there? That Andrew Bynum was absolutely positively going to be there and was going to be the banger and be the defensive presence under the rim that they needed? In hindsight, that just seems foolish.
What if he doesn't get hurt, though?
Well, obviously a year removed from the knee injury, you think, and then obviously he hurts it at the same time.
You're saying he's injury prone.
Well, listen, two straight years of essentially the same situation there. Don't the Lakers, what they're lacking, they could get by with at the point. I think. But obviously, I think they're really going to have a tough time with Nene and Kmart. And then after that, I don't see any way, whether it's your Celts or it's the Magic, anybody stopping LeBron from getting at least to the finals.
No.
And, you know, I think that front line for the Cavs is going to have the Lakers for lunch, if it even is the Lakers at this point.
The Bynum thing has never worked out all year. Even though he's playing really well, the Laker fans were all excited about him. I was watching him, and I was thinking that he kind of changed what they do. The way they should ultimately play is this wide-open European style and outscore teams, basically. Make the games 115 to 103. That's their type of game. When Bynum was in, it was like they were constantly trying to cater to him. Oh, let's post up Andrew. Everybody stand around. Let's get Andrew the ball. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like he threw them off. He was always better off coming off the bench. Now he's coming off the bench, and it's clear that he's not good coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And really, neither is Odom. He's better when he starts too, I feel like. I don't know how they solve that.
I think it's interesting.
It's a minutes issue.
Tim Legler said that when I talked to him earlier in the week, that the Lakers rely on just out-talenting people. You know, it's got to be Odom, Gasol, and Kobe just being better than whoever they're going
That's
up
their
against.
Biggest advantage. Yeah, they're a little small and not quite as tough as the other teams up front. But, you know, offensively, it's kind of devastating when those three guys are clicking together.
Yeah, I guess
so. And that's how they win.
And I guess that's why I think that ultimately the Lakers will find a way past the Nugs, because J.R. Smith is going to be checking Kobe. That's all mismatches aren't created equal, and I think that that's a gigantic advantage for the Lakers.
Well, yeah. Another red flag that the Lakers have is that either they just show up flat for games, which I don't think you can do when you haven't won the title. The Lakers, to me, all season have seemed like this team that won the title last year, thought they should have, or... Mm-hmm. The way they've carried themselves this year is like a year after hangover. Mm-hmm. I know they won a lot of games, but it was never – something was off. There was an arrogance to them. They'd take big leads and then blow them and stuff like that. Stuff that teams do after they've won the title, only they've never won. So my question is, if we're seeing this in all season, round one, round two, the right team is going to catch them. It's going to be like I don't want to say Tyson Douglas, but – if you're showing that you can get knocked down with the right hook, eventually somebody's going to throw the right hook.
I agree with you.
It's going to be Cleveland probably, but it might be Denver.
I don't know if it's going to be George Karl's Nugs that do it. But, yeah, I definitely at this point am convinced it's going to be Cleveland winning the title.
I've always been convinced.
Is that right? Yeah,
I picked him in November,
I was going to say, you did, to your credit, in January, you did say that
I've never
Cleveland is absolutely going to win.
They're hungry. They're the hungriest team, and they can get defensive stops, and they have the best guy.
And the other thing is, for all the talk of the depth of the Lakers and Kobe's supporting cast and the versatility and everything else, very quietly, yeah, Cleveland's rotation is superior to what the Lakers are throwing
out. I'm so tired of hearing...
In a playoff sense. There really is that division. You always hear about regular season style versus postseason, but it's absolutely legitimate. The Lakers can get by playing, like you say, a European style. It just doesn't, obviously, look at the results to this point, it just doesn't translate. You play a team that is willing to bang you the way the Rockets and the way Cleveland will and the way the Nugs are going to, then, you do get exposed as being soft.
They're like the Magic in that they're a different team when they're up 12. They have a little swagger to them. Mm-hmm. They're flying around. They get more confidence. They're kind of front runners. I hate to use that word because it really sounds more negative than it should be. But like, for instance, what Dwight Howard did in game 6 was the first time I saw from him, we got to win this game. I got to do everything I can to help us win this game. And he played the way that he normally plays when they're up 10. And he's like, oh, this is cool. No pressure. I can just do my thing. Last night he was like, I don't want to lose. I'm not ready to leave the series yet. And the Lakers, when they're up 15, that's when they look the best. Farmer's making threes, and Odom's taking threes. They're laughing. They're strutting around. But if you punch them a couple times, like Houston has done a couple times in the series,
becomes defer to Kobe.
Around. They watch him. And then Kobe, at the same time, for all his I'm allegedly unselfish and all the stuff we have to read every year about him, he snaps into 2004 finals mode. He takes the 29 shots.
Yep.
They're not good when he takes 29 shots.
Listen.
It's a worst-case scenario for them.
Well, you know, and as far as that goes, what do you think about this? I think that this is a huge 2 weeks or month that's coming up for Kobe Bryant's legacy. For his entire career, it's going to be boiled down by the what happens in this next month. Think about this. His career is set up now. It's sort of a shame for him as one of the all-time great players, I think. You know, I think you can acknowledge probably that he's in the top five NBA players or at least non-centers in the history of the league. Would you agree with that?
No.
No, you wouldn't. All right. No. Well, I think that he has a chance to make sure that he is a part of that conversation forever.
He can break the top 10 if he wins the title.
With a title this year, all right. Yeah. I have him a little higher up than you do. But the front end of his career is Michael Jordan is still in the league. And now the back end of his career is going to be obscured by LeBron. So now it's really a question of can he interrupt that? Can he interrupt the LeBron dynasty by 1 year? Because LeBron's going to win a title in a month or he's going to win it in a month or a year. A month and a year.
Kobe needs to win the title as the team's best player.
That's
and
right.
if he doesn't,
that's
historically, exactly right. his career will be remembered in a different way.
That's exactly
right. But he knows that.
That's exactly right. Yeah, people want to defend that, especially in L.A. He has three rings and everything. But Kobe
He's the second best guy on those teams.
Yeah, that's absolutely. There's no question about that. People want to debate that and everything. But listen, Kobe has more as much
wait a second.
As
what
anybody
is there,
has made the point that he has to win a title on his own away from Shaq Fu. Shaq Fu knows it. He did that rap last summer about it, about the ring. That's what matters.
But what's the debate, though? I mean, he was the second best guy on those teams. Shaq averaged like a 35-15 in the finals.
Right. Well, I guess the idea is that you take Kobe off of those teams, would they have won it? That's the argument.
You could say that about Scottie Pippen or Kevin McHale or anybody. He was the second banana on those teams.
Right. But I think that his legacy, Kobe's legacy, is going to change wildly with what happens over this next month. Like I say, I'm pessimistic about what's going to happen to the Lakers, but think about it. If LeBron wins, not unlike the MVP, by the way, I think winning this MVP for LeBron, it's not going to be what it's been the last half dozen years where 1 year it's KG's turn and then it's Duncan's turn and then it's Kobe's turn. I think LeBron has a stranglehold on it now for the next half dozen years. I don't know who's going to crack that with the possible exception of maybe a guy like Chris Paul doing something and taking the Hornets to some magical season. I think LeBron wins that thing for the next many moons.
You're forgetting a crucial part of NBA history.
What's that?
Which is that people get bored of voting for the same guy.
Yeah, maybe.
As we saw
true.
With Charles Barkley and Karl Malone winning MVP awards when Michael Jordan was at his
peak. Yeah, that's a fair point.
You'll vote for him twice in a row, and then the third year you start looking around. And you're like,
Well, either way, I do think LeBron is – I don't think it's – you know, people love to do the still – it's so antiquated as far as I'm concerned. And it's really changed in just a year's time. The idea of who's better between Kobe – and LeBron is a laughable. You haven't been watching the two guys play, and it's not to disparage Kobe. LeBron is just that good. I mean,
but you got to go one step further. Kobe is at a different point of his career now.
Yeah,
he's made the necessary adjustments to be 95% as good as he was, or 93, whatever it is. But he's now has 1,150 games or something on his odometer, and is just. Not the same guy. Is he in his early 30s?
Yeah,
now?
I think he's 31 now. He's going to start the transit, or is he 30? Whatever he is. Yeah, he's around.
You talk
that
about
age,
like 30. His legacy, and you know, I'd go a step further. I'd say this is the last call for him.
I agree. Well,
because I don't think his knees and his body. No matter how hard he works out, no matter what he does, I don't care if he cheats and takes, you know, female fertility drugs. You're not going to change the mileage that you have on your knees and your body. You
can't
undo it.
Jordan gave the model for a guy like Kobe for what he needs to do and become more of a mid-range jump shooter. He's not going to be getting to the rim like he has for the last decade. Exactly. If they win the title this year, though, if Kobe can somehow figure it out, and it would be positioned, obviously, as Kobe versus LeBron if they get to the finals. If he leads the Lakers to the title, then suddenly he'll be the toast of Los Angeles, the toast of the NBA. He'll have gotten his ring on his own.
Yep.
He'll take the perception of him for all of time to a different level. And he'll also he'll opt out. He'll take less than the max of what he could get paid so that he can keep Lamar Odom and Trevor Ariza in the fold. He'll be a good guy beyond everything.
He'll never do that.
Well, he would do that. I bet you if they have a ring, get a ring, they're not going to change. They'll say, let's stick with the status quo.
You're crazy.
But if they lose though, the inclination for Kobe to take less than max ain't going to happen.
You're insane.
Why? You think Kobe's going to
These guys measure by themselves by how much money they make. Well, and beyond that, they're competitive.
Well, then what's going to happen to the Lakers then? Because they're not going to be able to keep Odom and Ariza if they lose.
Odom's not going anywhere.
You don't think so?
No, and here's why. He loves living on the beach. Mm-hmm. Where else can he where else can he live on the beach? What other NBA teams? I don't know if you read the ESPN magazine thing about him like a month or 2 months ago.
Yeah, I did.
He wants to be on the beach. Yeah, he basically said, I love living on the beach. I wake up every day, I'm on the beach. No other team can offer that.
Oh, there is a team. Just walk across the hallway. Become a Los Angeles.
You can't do that again. I mean, the other option is he go to Miami, which isn't inconceivable. So it's one of those two. But, you know, for instance, he'd be an awesome signing for the team that shall not be named. The perfect kind of veteran guy who's been there before. You give him $60 million for 6 years. Now you have Jeff Green, you got Durant, you have Odom, you have Russell Westbrook. That's your four foundation. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of fill them around with some big guys and some spot up shooters. That's a nice team.
That is a good one. Yeah.
It's a nice fit for them. He's unselfish. He can kind of post up. You got long guys. That'd be nice. But well, he would never play there ever.
I think that, yeah, and well, of all the NBA teams that you could sign with, you know, regardless of
their
lineups. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say, would that be your first choice? That would be the last one on my list, too. But
if I like the beach, I would not want to go to Middle America.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine being Kevin Durant saying, I get to live in one of the great cities of, I'm in Seattle and everything, and then 1 year later.
It's a tragedy. But back to your point about Kobe and his legacy and all that.
And this is it, right? I mean, so I guess.
Well, I mean, last year it took a hit, but then somehow.
Because L.A. is very, here's why. Because
it's so, it's the city of revisionist history.
It is, no.
I was at the game and Kobe had quit completely by the second quarter. He was out.
Listen, you say
that to any Laker fan out here, oh, that's not true at all. You guys are getting every call. And
I was there.
The guy quit.
It is. There is something in the culture of L.A. People always say people have better things to do. They're out surfing and whatever, all that kind of nonsense. The people care, but there is something different. L.A. is the most forgiving town on the face of the earth.
Do you mean anything?
Well, Manny Ramirez is a perfect example of that. Manny Ramirez... The Lakers lose last spring, and I thought, well, everybody's going to be depressed in L.A. because how many chances are you going to get to defeat your longtime arch rival in the Celtics? And the next day, people were like, oh, we'll get them next year. Oh, Lakers will come right back. And that forgiving sort of tone allows the Lakers to play the way they've played this year. There isn't a lot of pressure on them to do it. I do think there will be a lot if they lose this year. But Manny Ramirez, the next day, people are bringing signs to Chavez Ravine saying, we don't think you juiced Manny. Manny admitted he did it. What are you talking about, people?
Well, consider where we live, though. This is an era where if you turn 40 and you're female, you get work done.
Listen. This is the town where O.J. Simpson and Robert Blake were found innocent. This is the town that's forgiven. This is the town that's forgiven Kobe Bryant for not trying hard, for supposedly wanting out of town for his legal troubles in Colorado. And if you say anything less around these parts, then he's the greatest player in the history.
You're not allowed to mention Eagle, Colorado now.
Then it never happened. This is the town where Robert Downey Jr. is the most sought after actor on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Forgiveness. How much trouble can you get in for doing steroids, by the way, when the governor of the state did steroids? I mean, this town does not punish failure or ineptitude or anything like that. The fact they made not one, not two, but seven police academy movies. Where else would that be allowed?
It should be its own country. I've been thinking about this a lot, I really feel like if Mexico could be its own country.
Yeah. Baja California. Who does that belong to?
California should be its own country. Mm-hmm. It should have its own set of rules and its own value systems and its own money.
It sort of does.
You should have your own money.
It
should have money that has like Frank Sinatra's on the $100 bill. You know what I mean? Yeah. I also think Nevada should be its own country. Nevada should just like really embrace like what Nevada is and just. But
every once in a while it does. I mean, like, you know, I'll go 6 months, sometimes 18 months. And every once in a blue moon, I'm flipping the channels like I was the other night, in fact, and came across Predator. And I think that's the governor of the state.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, like I say, you know, if it were George Clooney were the governor or Clint Eastwood, it'd be all right. I can kind of see that. But it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. Is Jean-Claude Van Damme next in line to take over for him? Well, it's thought, really quite absurd.
I thought the same thing, but a little different. Watching his schlong sway back and forth at the beginning of the Terminator. This is a guy who's like, they're like, Arnold, should we shoot you from the waist up? No, show the whole thing. I'm very willing to do a nude scene. Now this guy's like deciding our budget. It's amazing. I always think like, there's certain people, and really this is my goal in life to get into this group. These people that can basically do anything and be forgiven.
Mm.
Like Charles Barkley. He drives drunk.
Right.
He leaves a bar in Scottsdale. He drives drunk. He's going to have a sexual encounter with some random woman who is not his wife. He gets arrested. He gets taken to jail. He brags about said encounter at the police station. They write that part in the police report. Takes a leave of absence, comes back 6 weeks later, and now is featured in 20 different commercials. He's all over the place. It's like it never happened. I mean, can you imagine if, I don't know, Mark Jackson. Let's say Mark Jackson, similar stature, number one on the number one basketball team. Mm-hmm. The same chain of events happens to Mark Jackson. Does he work the playoffs?
Yeah, no, and I guess I'm thinking of the diner scene at the end of Pulp Fiction when Travolta and Sam Jackson are having the conversation about eating a pig or a dog, and you know, I guess personality goes a long way.
Right? It does.
I mean, Chaz Barkley's a funny, lovable guy, and so you have to give him a pass.
And this is, I think a couple years ago wrote about the Barkley zone in a mailbag where once you get, it's Howard Stern was really the best example. Howard Stern can say anything on his radio show and people aren't going to be offended because it's Howard Stern. But you put that same kind of whatever offensive joke or whatever, like Don Imus, and granted, he should have been fired.
Mm-hmm.
But if Howard said that, all that same stuff, and Robin Givens was sitting there, and it was Howard, I don't think it's a big deal.
That's true. That's
people don't like Don Imus, and what he said was offensive, and they're like, that's it, you're out, Don Imus. The same thing with Rush Limbaugh.
You're out, Rush. And you know, go back to steroids. You know, Manny Ramirez, and for that matter, Sammy Sosa, who obviously hasn't ever actually been caught from what I know, but people hold them to a much different standard than they do Barry the Creep Bonds and Roger Clemens.
Football players, baseball players. Yeah. Sean Marion, 4-game suspension, steroids, makes the Pro Bowl the same year.
What is your theory
football.
On that? But why,
it's
you know,
football.
I
it's like, oh, yeah, these guys are big. They got to cheat.
No, it's not that simple. What is the reason why no one cares? The 70 Steelers, well-known to have juiced. Now, my rationalization for that is that they were all over the NFL. It's not like the Steelers just were the best team of the era, so they're the one who are marginally demonized, but nobody is asking for the Lombardi.
The head of
the head
of Chuck Noll.
And like you say, Sean Merriman, Deuce McAllister last season and everything, and those guys come back. There's not much about it, but anybody has the steroid stink on them in baseball. Why the difference in perception?
I tried to write about this once, and I did it like about 85% successfully, but it really comes down to we have this mistaken belief that we love baseball because you love comparing the numbers.
That's like exactly my thinking.
Whatever, McGuire hits 62 homers. That's so cool. Roger Maris hit 61, and mm-hmm. they played in the same types of ballparks. But the reality is every era is different. You know, Babe Ruth played without black guys. Bob Gibson pitched when – was the mound higher or lower? I can't remember.
The mound was, yeah, higher.
The mound was higher. So he put up whatever ERA he put up. The 80s guys, speed, you're supposed to steal a lot. Ricky Henderson steals however many bases, but you didn't care if you got threw out back then. That was the era. This is the era where everybody bulked up and they hit homers, and now we're heading into the speed defense era. My whole point is I don't think there's any way to compare eras anyway. Cy Young got a 511 wins. How does that compare to anything that's happened?
It's so true that it's mostly an illusion.
It's all illusion.
The perception that you can compare eras is why people care about it.
But you can't. I think what really makes people mad is they had this illusion that they could, and then it's like, yeah, but Jackie Robinson didn't play baseball till 1947, and Babe Ruth had retired 10 years before. Yeah, but still.
Yeah,
but
no.
Still, they didn't, you know, baseballs were not as good back then. So that was 60 homers, totally legitimate.
But here's who I feel the worst for with this whole thing is that people talk about should they be in the Hall of Fame, and I think they should be in the Hall of Fame, and should there be asterisks attached to the guys who get caught and everything else. But the fact is that 100 years from now, people will just associate anybody who played during this era as being a cheater, being the juiced heir, and the numbers don't really count. Well, listen, I mean, we look back, we don't really distinguish one guy from the next on the Black Sox. We just know that the 1919 Chicago White Sox were cheaters. Same way, 100 years from now, people will look back and just, so a guy like Ken Griffey Jr., who's never been associated with it at all, and I think we can assume he probably didn't do it because he's never been healthy.
I make no assumptions anymore.
The couple guys, Ken Griffey Jr., and Greg Maddux. If Greg Maddux has been juicing, then he was not doing it right.
I'd say I would throw Jeter on there just because the arc of his career matches the arcs of. But I was talking to my buddy Gus about this week. Like, everybody who has a wild aberration year is suspect. But yet, like, I watch, Rico Petrocelli was an aging third baseman that the Red Sox had, but he had a pretty good year, played shortstop. One year he hit 40 homers. He had like a 400 on base and 40 homers in 1970. Now, if you looked at that year, you just pulled it out and you just took the year off it and you're like, look at this guy's career. He took all the years off. You'd be like, whoa, look at the juice in that year. They didn't juice. They didn't have steroids in 1970.
That's true.
We've kind of removed any sort of aberrational element to any, what if a guy just stopped smoking one year? What if a guy got a trainer one year? What if a guy had a bad back, but it felt good that year?
Yeah.
Now it's like, if you have a weird year, it's like, yeah, you're cheating.
Yeah, Brady Anderson, for all we know, just started jazzercising in the offseason.
Maybe he did. When I was growing up, Fred Lynn, out of nowhere in 1979, had 333 with 39 homers, 139 RBI or something. It was by far his highest homer total.
It's 79. He's only a couple of years off the MVP at that point, right?
Yeah, but he had always been like a guy, like his best type of year would be 325, 20 homers, a lot of doubles. This one year hit 39. And at the time, everybody was like, he bulked up with Nautilus. And I just accepted that.
Yeah,
and
Nautilus,
he's my favorite player. Well, that was the big thing, though, was Fredlin Nautilus. Oh, he's one of the new wave of guys. But then you read the Steelers, steroids, 75 through 79. Fredlin, my favorite player ever. I met him. I was taller than him. And when you meet these guys, they're these little guys, it's like, how did you hit 39 homers? Now it's like, even my beloved Fred Lynn, I'm like, oh no. Did he run into one of the Steelers at some party? And they're like, hey dude, take some of these.
Well, yeah, but that is the point though, is that you think about baseball players and they are human sized guys. You know, football players now, you can't really, that's why I don't think anybody puts the stink on the NFL guys. Because you can't really, it's fun to sit around and talk about the 80s 49ers versus the 60s Packers and stuff, but if you took the 70 Steelers and the juice and everything else, I mean, Jack Lambert still is playing at 220 pounds at middle linebacker. Can you imagine? I mean, USC would beat the Steelers of the 70s at this point.
But back to the point that you had originally about why don't they get mad at football players? It's because there's really no way to compare eras of footballs.
Right. That's what I'm saying. This generation of the Detroit Lions are better than the greatest teams of all time that played 30, 40 years ago.
Well, but no, but beyond that, like Peyton Manning throws 49 TDs and Tom Brady throws 50. Like, wow, that's a record.
Yeah.
Yeah, but read anything about football and like the teams, Cliff Branch was one of the best receivers in football in the mid 70s, had like 40 catches a year because nobody threw.
Well, people always say that neither Lynn Swann nor John Stallworth belong in the Hall of Fame. Hooey and applesauce from where I sit. They're, again, different era.
Cliff Branch should be in too.
Perhaps, yeah.
If you're the top five or six in your league for 7, 8 years, you should be in the Hall of Fame. This is why like Art Monk, he comes up. Now teams are throwing more, and Art Monk puts up these crazy stats, but he was really a beneficiary of his era.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Cliff Branch was of the era of, hey, look, Cliff, three times a game, you're going to run deep, and we're going to throw it to you, and otherwise you got to block. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I hear you. Well, I loved Al Davis talking about it. I heard him actually talking about one of the games back in the 70s, one of the playoff games, and he said the most feared wide receiver in the National Football League was Clifford Branch. Clifford Branch is fantastic. But
wait a second though, about football. How big can these guys get? Like you mentioned Char and hockey. Now we're seeing like these 6'8", 340-pound offensive lineman. And this is a relatively new thing. But I mean, you look back, like I had lunch with the Hogs once for a column. Mm-hmm. None of those guys were bigger than me. I mean, maybe they're bulkier, but they were all the same height. Now we have these 6'8", 6'9 guys.
I know.
Baselli felt like maybe Baselli and Orlando Pace were that first wave, but now it's kind of commonplace.
Well, what's going to happen? I mean, the NBA.
Seven-footers?
What's it been for the last 20 years in the NBA? The length, the general length and quickness of the average player is now too much for the size of the court almost. You know, it is, people always talk about how it's all about exposing mismatches on the floor, isolating mismatches and stuff, but it kind of has to be that because of the length and speed of the defenders dictates that you play it that way. Yeah, in the NFL, it's, I don't know that it's about style of play as much as it is. Everybody's just going to keep getting hurt. I mean, you can't.
Yeah,
they're bigger. They're not just bigger, but they're also moving faster than they used to.
Yeah,
and when you run into them, I mean, I talked to Merrill Hodge about, you know, was the AFC title game Ravens and Steelers the most vicious game you've ever seen? And he said there were some nasty battles with the Oilers when he was playing and everything. But think about that. Go back and look at that game. I mean, the Steelers they didn't you know put hard hits on the Ravens. They knocked out cold three Ravens over the course of the game. It's really violent.
Well, in the next 10 years, does a guy die in the field?
Who knows? But I mean, I thought Willis McGahee at the end of that AFC title game, I literally thought he was dead. The way the players reacted to it,
we're heading
from both
there.
Sides, it seemed like, oh my God, the way they're waving people over, he's done.
We're getting there. You think like, I think if it happens, it'll be a guy who's had a couple concussions before and gets one of those McGahee-type hits, and that's going to be it.
And then what? And then what happens?
Then it's going to be this big referendum about how do we change this. I think that's where football's going. It's got too big and too strong and too fast, and we're headed for something that good.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, real quick, what would you do if, apropos of nothing except that we're talking NFL and we're in L.A., don't you think everybody denounces NFL in LA by saying no one out here cares would support that because you have your Patriots and people have the Bears and the Seahawks and wherever they hail from. But wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't we all just get together and buy some season tickets and go, you know, even if you didn't go every game, we would split them up. Like maybe eight of us would get together and buy four season tickets and go to four games a year. Wouldn't that be great?
I have no doubt it could work.
Wouldn't that be
fun?
And
not just that, the thing people forget is that they're like, oh, yeah, there's so many rich people, celebrities. They're not going to go sit in the second deck. Like, you don't understand how many people are here, like, that work on TV shows or movies or whatever that are like the prop guy. The prop guy's buying four tickets. Like, those guys are always like that guy Darren on Jimmy's show.
Yeah. It's
big guys. Kinda like, you know, those are your football type fans. I mean, I have no doubt they'd sell 70K fans. They'd fill it out every week.
Of course they would fill a joint if they brought it at the end.
And also it'd be beautiful. I mean, right, what a nice way to spend a day. You go tailgate, you drink in the sun.
I know, and people say, well, we already have college football. Yeah, a lot of towns have college football.
But yeah.
It's fine. We'll be able to make do with Saturdays and Sundays watching football. And also, I feel a little bad. What is your rule on this? Will you impose on your children your allegiances? I'm sure you must have addressed this.
I've thought about this a little.
Yes.
Well, I have a friend who... his son just picked the Lakers. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
Front runner. I mean, that's what little children do. They like the local team, especially if it's good.
It's not even front runner. It's you're in school, mm-hmm. and everybody else like your three best friends like the Lakers, and you're like, yeah, I like the Sixers. My dad lived there, but you've never lived there. But in my opinion, it's a failure of parenting if your son doesn't like the same teams that you do.
Yeah, I'm conflicted.
You could brainwash them.
You know, we have the little boy now, just 8 weeks old, so we don't have to confront this just yet. But I am trying to talk to the likes of you who are a couple of years ahead of me on that, because yeah, you know, I certainly, coming from Pittsburgh, wouldn't try and impose on my children the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm not going to. You know, that's a form of child abuse. Especially
maybe let him have the Dodgers or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, listen. You try to start rooting for, you know, I don't know who, the San Diego Chargers instead of the Steelers. Well, I'm afraid you can't watch football any longer. You know, until you start doing it the right way, no football for you. Is that fair?
I think it's very fair, and I'd even go a step further. If you're not going to root for my teams, move out.
Oh, really? Wow.
Go live somewhere else.
Sleep in, you know, at least in the garage. Yeah, in the car.
I think at some point you got to stand up as a parent.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a deliberate act of defiance not to root for dad's team. Plus, I mean, think about how we feel about our dads. You love your dad. You want to do whatever your dad does.
Yeah.
If my dad's watching I only like the Boston teams because my dad was watching the games.
So
and I'm
true,
like,
right?
I want to be like dad.
Yeah.
So if your son doesn't want to be like you, you're a failure.
Yeah, it's a symptom of a larger issue if they decide to root against me, right?
Yeah, I feel it's no different than if my daughter came home from school one day dressed like Paris Hilton and introduced me to like her 22-year-old boyfriend when she was like 15.
So
I failed as a parent.
Right, I agree. Yes, instead of there's not, you know, the current, it seems like the generation of children now are parented to believe that they can't do anything wrong, that society is failing them and not the other way around. So it's not, so I feel a little bad. So I am all right then to say you will root for my teams.
I think parents underestimate their own powers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hear like stuff about sexting now and all that stuff.
Like, I don't even know what that is.
Like
but
sixth
I
and seventh and
together.
Eighth graders who are sending sex pictures of each other on their phones or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable behavior. Yeah. No child of mine will sext. Let me tell you something. If I'm paying for the cell phone, I'm looking at every text and every email that comes in and out of that cell phone. You're not going to be like, that's my cell phone. You can't look at it. Oh, I'm going to look at it.
Yeah,
I'm going to look at it every day.
There's a lot of apathy. If you can't even take the time to do that. But all right.
Hold on. I got to say one thing. My family was here last weekend. And somehow we're talking, my stepmother, there's a birthday party, and my stepmother was going to put makeup, like lip gloss on the kids. I won't let my daughter wear makeup until she's like 15.
Yeah, I don't even like when children have pierced ears. When
it's
you see
creepy.
Little kids with pierced
put it
ears.
This way, JonBenet Ramsey, if your child is doing anything that reminds you of the JonBenet Ramsey photos, cut it right there.
That's a good standard.
Thank
right?
you.
Good good ruler. Right.
So my stepmother was talking about putting lip gloss on, and she meant clear lip gloss. She didn't say that. And my daughter said, but it's only going to be clear lip gloss because my dad won't let me wear makeup until I'm 16. She said it matter-of-factly, and I was like, that's right.
That's fantastic.
She knows the rule. And then later on, we're talking about dating, and she's like, well, I'm not going to go on a date till I'm 16 because that's what my dad said I can go on a date. I feel like you plant the stuff in the kid right away, and they just think that way. It's the same way as, like, you can't just walk across the street. You'll get hit by a car. You can't go on a date until you're 16.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, listen, I'll try some of that because, I'm worried about how this is going to shake out if, you know, here in LA, especially if there's a local football team, then what, you know, am I being abusive in some way? Hey, a couple things I wanted to talk about. I want to talk to you about some movies.
We got to wrap this up quick though.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, real quick, an NBA question that a listener sent that they want. Something I've said quite a bit is Michael Jordan's absence from the NBA, those two seasons, happened to coincide with the Rockets winning two titles.
Yeah.
I've said many times before, and I'm interested in your opinion. I think Michael Jordan's legacy would be a little bit different had those Bulls teams lost in the finals. He seemed invincible, but I think that Akeem and company would have beaten the Bulls in the finals. How say you?
No.
No, you really don't think so.
No.
They couldn't defend. Able to defend a center like that. I think Akeem would have had him for lunch.
No.
All right. Well, I was interested.
You know what? They had series in the past where they couldn't defend the center and it didn't matter.
I guess Patrick Ewing is the one you would hold up, but that's a little bit different.
But Ewing did well against him. Shaq in 96 had some huge games. They swept him anyway. There's examples of David Robinson always did well against them. Like, centers got their points or whatever they did, but it ultimately didn't matter.
All right. Well,
I think with Hakeem, it was more of like, there always has to be an alpha dog. So if the alpha dog leaves, somebody else is going to naturally rise up. It's like anything else.
Mm-hmm. You know? All right, fair enough. And then the other thing is you and House talk about movies that would be better if they would recast the female lead in them.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about – it was me and Jacko. We were talking Godfather 3.
Right.
And a listener actually sent the perfect actress that they should recast. And
I think
just digitally. Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, that's tough to beat.
So you pay Anne Hathaway $27 million. You just shoot all of the Sofia Coppola scenes with her. Digitally insert her, and it's a totally different movie.
I agree, and I have a few for you,
okay.
A couple that I thought of. I think the best movie one that I thought of is Face Off, Joan Allen. The movie sort of hinges on, we're supposed to be creeped out by John Travolta or Nick Cage having sex with John Travolta's wife, but we don't feel any sort of lure to her ourselves. So that sort of falls apart. If she were a fox, then we would go.
So like Kelly Preston, circa 97?
Absolutely. Yeah, yes. Okay. Now we would be talking about that. And then in TV terms.
Sharon Stone?
Yes. Great one. Yeah. See, now that's great.
How dare you have sex with Sharon Stone?
Same thing also with the Departed, too. You know, again, the rivalry there between DiCaprio and Damon is undermined a little bit by the fact that, I don't know, I guess that woman that they both are having a thing with is all
Here's right. how you know it didn't work. I don't think I've seen her since the movie came out.
Yeah, that's a great way to... And then,
if that movie didn't launch any semblance of a career for you, then maybe you weren't that good.
In TV terms, I just watched the Lost finale, and I think, again...
Careful.
What?
That's spoiling.
I'm not spoiling anything.
I'm just saying careful.
I'm just going to say Julia. She should be...
Juliet?
Juliet, yes. Should be foxier.
Yeah, you're saying like, who? No, but I would argue she's the right level of foxiness.
Oh, I disagree.
Because Jack would have liked her more.
So you think it works because, well, you know what? Maybe you make a good point that, and not just that, but Sawyer is still drawn to Kate even though he's had a 3-year thing with Juliet. And he wouldn't if she were really foxy. Maybe you're right. Maybe the plot hinges on the fact that she's fine, but not spectacular. Maybe you're right about that. I thought that was a good one, too. All right, you're right. When you're right, you're right.
What about Shawshank Redemption if a better actor played Andy Dufresne?
What do you mean, better actor? Who would have done
it? Tim Robbins is kind of weak. On the 320th viewing, I decided he could have been better.
Really?
A little bit better. Could have been slightly better.
I can't believe it. Wow, I'm stunned to hear Bill
Simmons.
How about
Sean Penn as Andy Dufresne?
Might have had a different tone. Oh, really? I'm stunned to hear you say anything bad about
He's weak in the scene where he tells Red Rose what Neo is. He's like, there's a rock under the tree. Just go there. You'll find it. A little weak.
Has no earthly business being there.
It's a little weak. So it's just it could have been better. Doesn't hold up to Morgan Freeman's performance. And I don't think he was nominated.
How do you not get nominated
as Andy Dufresne?
All right. Well, I really hadn't thought about that one.
Sean Penn or how about this? How about Tom Hanks as Andy Dufresne?
Oh, stop it.
Tom Hanks as Andy Dufresne.
Okay, it would work, and actually didn't.
Tom Hanks getting raped by the sisters, that just kills you if you're in the seat. Oh, you can't rape Tom Hanks!
That does work, because then the director who made Shawshank comes back with Green Mile, so obviously
you know why?
Him, it could have worked.
You know why he came back with Green Mile?
Why?
Because he was mad that he didn't cast Tom Hanks as Andy Dufresne.
It was the director's redemption.
Yeah, it was
right.
The director's redemption.
Yeah, that's right. And then a little corollary, too. I think I've talked to you about this, is, you know what's a weird thing with good-looking actors? There's certain women... Certain actresses who you wish could look the same way as they do in just one movie. It is, it's Cameron Diaz in The Mask, Kate Hudson in Almost Famous, and Kelly McGillis in Top Gun. You see them in anything else, not really particularly foxy, especially Kelly McGillis.
I don't even think Kelly McGillis in Top Gun was...
But, you know, if you just saw that, you would think she's an attractive woman.
See, I think Kelly McGillis is a great example of... A misfire.
Should be replaced. Yeah, you could do that.
How about this? Kelly Preston circa 1986.
Kelly Preston in that role, that takes it to a new level for me.
Or young Sharon Stone.
Yeah, even Tom Cruise would know that those were foxy women.
Yeah, it's slim pickings back then.
Yeah,
as you know, for some reason, my family and I, Top Gun was on, and we were watching it, and we probably caught the last 40 minutes, and like right near the end, the jukebox scene. Mm-hmm. And Kelly McGillis says to Tom Cruise, this is going to be complicated. And we all just start laughing like, oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be complicated because you're about to come out of the closet as a lesbian. But I was thinking like that movie's now a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a drama anymore. It actually should be listed like with Top Secret and Airplane and other movies. That's like Top Gun comedy, 1986. a young and impetuous pilot, whatever, tries to make his way up the ranks.
Well, you've definitely
every
done your part.
Every scene is funny.
You've done your part to make that and Roadhouse and the Karate Kid trilogy all in the comedy.
I would say Roadhouse is a comedy drama.
Yeah, I think
I would say Karate 3 is a comedy.
Yeah, it's a little bit. It does work a little bit like Three's Company. You know, Three's Company has a nice mix of they did actually try to be funny in there, and there are some things that actually do work, and then a lot of it is funny unintentionally.
I would argue that Top Gun is one of the five funniest movies of the 80s. I'm not even kidding. If you gave me a selection of 100 movies, I would laugh more watching Top Gun. That beach volleyball scene.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is interesting.
Look, I gotta go.
It's curious that all four of the participants in the beach volleyball game saw fit to oil themselves up just before. It's a little strange. And shave their chests.
I don't know if the movie itself was gay, which obviously we've discussed ad nauseum, and Tarantino did it, and Sleep With Me, whatever that movie was, or was the 80s gay? Because you look at the 80s, like you look at the music, like the Depeche Mode and The Cure and Morrissey
it's a little slight as we look back.
It's a little androgynous. I would even say the 80s was androgynous. You look at like the way women's haircuts were at the time.
Yeah.
Kind of that high, like kind of crew cutty with more hair on the top.
Yeah. A lot of aqua blue in the fashion for both fellas and for the ladies.
The women we liked, Pat Benatar, Joan Jett.
Wow.
All those types.
You might have uncovered something here, but then we've talked about in the 21st century that this new generation of guy is this metrosexual thing it seems like it's the same situation or seems like that's what's coming out of this generation. And like we talked about, you and I are on maybe the wrong side of the curve. I think everybody about like 2 or 3 years younger than us, every guy from this point forward shaves their bodies now. I think clean their chest.
Now, you know, you mentioned this another time, and
true.
I got listeners emailing
say no?
me saying, tell Damashek to stick it. Yeah.
Really?
Only
oh,
some
good.
People
I'm glad
shave
I'm
their
wrong.
Chest.
I feel bad because I feel like a heel going around like some sort of a gorilla out on the beach. I'm glad to hear that guys under 30 are not doing that. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. I'm fine with that.
So you'd have Roadhouse as a comedy and not a comedy drama?
Well, there. Listen, you don't think Dalton's trying to crack wise?
Would Point Break be a Opinion's comedy or a comedy drama for you?
Sort of like the Crayolas. Is it blue, green, or green, blue? I think, Busey is a card in the picture. That much, he's there as the comedic foil. So, yeah.
I got to say, Point Break it's a really good movie. The whole concept of the president bank robbers with the president masks
is that.
Really good. Keanu jumping out of the plane to catch Swayze in air. Like, that was actually kind of a cool scene.
That's good. I think we talked about, too, what's great about Keanu is I think he might be the only actor in history who holds the distinction of playing not just a college quarterback, but in two movies, you know, in The Replacements, he is also an Ohio State quarterback. It's Johnny Utah. Hmm. He's an Ohio State quarterback as well. Imagine that. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? That he had a knee injury or whatever
in
Point Break. He's Shane Falco in The Replacements and an Ohio State quarterback. And somebody emailed me a few months ago and said, who's better? Who would you take, Shane Falco or Johnny Utah? And the answer is if you think about it, they talk about the fact that Johnny Utah
got hurt.
Won the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
But they say, but he won the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Shane Falco threw it in the Sugar Bowl. He blew the game.
He choked.
Right. And so we know that Johnny Utah's, at least his Ohio State team, was better because they went to the Rose Bowl. And that's the Big Ten berth, and so when they went to the Sugar Bowl, they hadn't won the Big Ten Conference.
I'll go this far. That was a dumb question by your reader. The answer is obvious if you knew. A better question would have been...
You're a college football fan.
Here's
right.
a better question. So Johnny Utah, he wins the Rose Bowl, obviously, as a pro prospects, hurts his knee, can no longer play. Apparently, even though it's 1991, there's no surgery that can fix his knee. Famous guy, won the Rose Bowl. Now becomes an undercover FBI agent.
Yeah, seems like a bad choice by the feds.
Shouldn't famous people not be undercover FBI agents?
I know. Is this
These guys all recognize him? Say, hey, Johnny Utah, what are you doing now?
Does it rely on the fact that it's not it's before the age of the internet and Swayze and his pals wouldn't just be able to Google him and say like, oh, he's off studying to be a fed now.
Like it's like, yeah, that's true. Point Break 2 would be Tom Tebow. Hey, Tom Tebow, what are you up to now? Oh, nothing. just learning how to surf. They Google him 2 seconds later. Oh, he's in the FBI.
That Point Break football scene on at night on the beach.
It's so good.
It's the rules change constantly. It's ridiculous. And they do the thing that I hate, that you only, one of those things that you only see in movies that never happens in real life, which is that apparently you can drop out of the game at a whim to stop and hit on a girl, and the game will just keep playing. You also see
nobody
it in Red
mad.
Dawn. Powers Booth is, you know, one of the little teenage girls, Jennifer Grey Thompson or Leah Thompson. Well, I forget which one is in love with him. Leah Thompson is in love with him, I think. And so the ball falls out of bounds, and he sits down next to them. And they say, come on, Powers Booth, get back into the game. And he's like, you guys go on without me. And then they just keep playing. Well, we can't play without you. We're playing a 4-on-4 here game. We got, one of us has to be the automatic QB. The game's ruined while you hit on broads.
And not just that, but in Point Break, it's like, was it 4-on-4 or 5-on-5?
I think something like that. Yeah.
Couldn't have been more than 5-on-5. Could we agree 5-on-5 is the most amount of people in that game?
Yeah, I think so.
There's no way more than 5-on-5. So the last play when he tackles Swayze in the water, it's a cut to Keanu. Sheds a block. He sheds like 19 blocks and then somehow tackles Swayze in the water. Swayze's running for 140 yards in a beach football game. And then for some reason veers into the water. Like there's no sidelines.
That's great. And that's another thing that happens only in movies about football, which is like you just say, it's sort of like a martial arts movie, like a Van Damme picture or something, that even though Van Damme is fighting 27 bad guys at once, they only come at him one at a time.
Yeah,
the weaving forever, like every 5 yards, the guy carrying the football has to get around one more defender. They just apparently are all lined up playing some novel sort of defense where they're all in one long line.
Yeah. I think I talked about this with Corolla once. I would love to be named to some sort of committee appointed by all the Hollywood studios of the VP of sports movie common sense. And you could be on it. We could have Kroll on it for those scenes like Ghost Rider drives him crazy because he only jumps 100 yards on the football field. Yeah. There's no end zone. But just like if you're making a sports movie or a sports movie scene, you just got to consult. You got to show us the rough cut. Because if I'm there in 1985 when they're doing Teen Wolf and I say – you can't show that Michael J. Fox move. You showed it 45 seconds before. It's the same shot. Anybody's going to know it's the same shot.
If it costs the movie better. And listen, you know, if it costs the studio a little extra money, you simply cannot go forward with Teen Wolf in that state with Chubby being the center of the team who can't leave his feet. You know, I mean,
yeah, Chubby Skyhook.
Yeah. You can't do it. I'm sorry. We have to recast that role. I'm sorry.
Shoot it, fat boy. No movie has ever had more derision for fat people, I think ever, than Teen Wolf. It makes like it just attacks Chubby's weight the whole time. The guy's named Chubby. It's like one of those movies like fat bashing.
I love that, and I feel like you and I have probably done this on on your podcast probably 17 times each. But another 80s thing that I love, 80s movie things, the teen movies all seem to hinge on the bad guy is supersized bad guy, you know,
over the top bad guy.
Craig, what's his name?
Craig Sheffer. James Spader.
Yes, and versus Spader in Some Kind of Wonderful. That you can say that you have so much juice. You're not just the BMOC, and you aren't a popular guy. But when it comes down to it, when it's time for James Spader to take a beating, that Craig Sheffer can say to his pals, "Take him outside and work him over, boys." Really? That's how it works? Did you have that kind of power in high school? You could just say to your friends, "Hey, take him outside and work him over." What? Who would you do that for? Like, you take him outside and beat him up. What am I going to do that for?
I also love you're allowed to hit women if you're the BMOC. And you have to stay with him. Yeah. Why are you with him? You don't understand what it's like. Like, I do. He just hit you.
Yeah.
You can probably find boyfriends who don't hate you.
Well, Brad West, the great example of that is, I love in movies too, the great range that the leading lady has. You know, Dalton, so we're to believe that she would go from Brad Wesley, who's this old man, this bald old man, but she also has a thing for the spiritual, muscly, martial arts.
I'm going to say comedy for Roadhouse because he just made me think of it when he's outside doing the feng shui karate or whatever. Uh-huh. Feng shui karate. What do you even call that? I think he created it. He called it the Swayze.
Tai Chi.
That's what he was doing?
I think so. Isn't that that's what Daniel-san does. That's what he learns from Miyagi in 3.
That was great. I it was almost
he starts doing it right in the middle at the All Valley.
It felt like Swayze threw that in. Like he's like, hey guys, I've been experimenting. I think it'd be really cool if we did a scene. And he was like too big of a star to say no. All right, Patrick. Yeah, it's a great idea. This cooler. The guy's a freaking bar cooler. He's doing Tai Chi. What do you think about just doing a live podcast where we watch Roadhouse?
Well, count me in. I mean, it's scene for scene, a classic. There's no dead weight.
Jacqueline.
Yes.
What if Dave and I watched Roadhouse and just we started the podcast and we said, press play in the podcast right now, right when the movie started, and people could just watch Roadhouse while we made jokes? Would that be legal? Are we violating laws?
I don't know, actually.
Let's do it.
I have to check into it. It might be problematic.
But why?
I don't know.
How could they stop us from just watching a movie?
Then maybe you can. I don't know. I'm sure it would be riveting no matter what.
Well, wow. You know what? Let's get feedback from the listeners on this. If they want it, we'll do it. We do it anyway. We might as well just have headphones on.
Maybe invite the Ace Man to come by as well. Yeah, wow.
Could we have 3 headsets? Maybe he'd be on a phone.
he'd be loud headsets. Enough, yeah.
Yeah, but if Corolla's in it, though, he's going to talk, though. We might as well just give him both headsets.
Yeah, and plus his thing is, as I'm sure you know, is he has to pause the movie for 20-minute stretches so he can literally stand up in front of the television and deliver a monologue.
You know what's funny about Corolla, and I love him, but nobody has done more to advance the causes of anti-blowhardism and point out blowhards. And yet he's the same guy who pauses movies and gives 20-minute soliloquies that we all have to sit there and wait till he's done. For
like you say, and ironically, it's about the blowhard in the movie.
He gives blowhard soliloquies about blowhards.
Enough about this blowhard. Now listen to this blowhard.
It's always trouble when he says, here's the thing. It's like, well, actually, it's not going to be one thing. It's going to be a thing that lasts forever. All right, Dave Damashek, this was fun, part 1 and 2. We never did talk about Orlando Celtics. We think Boston wins that, right? Heart of a champion?
I absolutely think. And by the way, as a side note, I will say that I know it's not going to result in a title for your Celtics this year, so a little short of what you had hoped for going into the season, but What a great group. Objectively, I have no rooting interest against the Celtics. This has been a delight. You're throwing out Eddie Howe, Scalabrine, and Big Baby is hitting buzzer beating season saving shots for you. It's really great. It is the difference, I guess, of being, you know, going into a movie, your expectations. If you're expecting The Godfather, then maybe this isn't that great. But if you can enjoy Roadhouse for its merits, that's sort of what these Celtics are.
My whole thing is, there are 2 goals in sports. Your goal is to win the title, and then your goal is to defend the title. Mm-hmm. Those are really the only 2 objectives you have as a sports team. And anybody can win 1 title. We've seen it a million times.
Sure, right.
Rarely do you see a team that has every reason to say, you know what, we won the title, we're banged up, we have all these excuses we can hang on. Good job, fellas. We went as far. This team just won't give up the title. They're going to defend it until somebody chops their heads off with a machete and beats them.
I think it's fantastic. And, you know, like I say, I don't think they have any chance against Cleveland, but assuming they even get by the Magic. But again, I think it's been this is going to be a team that will be remembered around Boston. You would know better than I, but I think people are really going to hold this up. And Scalabrine and the rest, I think they'll be iconic guys, 20, 30 years from now.
It's my favorite team in the 80s was the 87 Celtics that ironically did not win the title. And I think for this new generation of Boston fans, maybe they'll remember this team. Just that Chicago had a better team. Orlando definitely had a better team. I mean, this series should be over. My one fear about Game 7 is it took Stan Van Gundy really almost six games, but he finally figured out that when he plays Courtney Lee, Pietras, Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis, and Howard, that we can't really match up with those five guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's been playing JJ, thank God, he's been playing JJ Redick a lot. He's always been playing Alston or Johnson at point. But really, they don't need a point guard because those other guys aren't good anyway. But Courtney Lee gives them stuff. Like, he'll actually make shots. He's a good defender. Not a typical point guard, but I don't think it matters. But when you play those five, we can't score on those five guys.
I agree with you. I think that trouble. Orlando team, if the Celtics were fully healthy, it would be a fun seven-game series to watch against the Cavs. I think the Magic are just because of the matchups. Again, they're unique because of Dwight Howard. Suddenly, if you are going through him a little bit, giving it to him in the blocks, and then kicking it out to all those guys, it's not as though they're just a bunch of it's not as though it's just a team of Reddicks out there waiting to shoot the three ball. But those guys, Turkoglu and Lewis and those guys are scores, and like you say, Courtney Lee
he's the only guy they have who can get into the paint. And if you can't get in the paint, you're not going to get Pietras that corner three, and you're not going to get Rashard Lewis his open three. And Rafer Alston just hasn't been able to get in the paint. And, God bless him. I couldn't be happier that Stan Van Gundy didn't realize this till the second half, but the game turned around yesterday. Or game six on Thursday, it turned around when he played those five guys in Boston. That was it. We didn't score again.
I know. I agree. Yeah, I think that.
I don't know what he's thinking.
Else, they give you a different look than anyone else you go up against in the NBA. The Magic do, they have the potential to.
Well, they have a habit of having these runs, and it's really hard to stop them when they get going. And at the same time, they blow leads because they're not that good defensively. But if I were them, and those are my five defensive guys, maybe you have a chance to beat Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't have a conventional point guard. Mm-hmm. If you played the Lee, Pietras, Shard, Haydu, and then Howard, and LeBron's going to score what he's going to score, but maybe you stay close. I don't know. I don't think Boston has a chance against Cleveland. It's just we have nobody.
I agree,
and
I think the Magic would have a chance of giving them a little bit of a run. I don't think they, like I say, Cleveland would win the series either way. But
my issue with them is that they're praising Dwight Howard in Game Six for he's super aggressive tonight. He really wants it tonight, and it's announcers shouldn't notice when somebody is super aggressive. It's the playoffs. You should always be super aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Every game he played in game six the way that Kenyon Martin has played every single playoff game. So, in my mind, for him, he's just not even close.
Well, the Lakers
yet.
Are playing every other game. They show up for it.
But you've seen like the Denver thing, and the reason I do think they're interesting, the Kobe matchup is so bad for them, but the bottom line is Chauncey, Melo, and Kmart. Those three guys, your three best guys. Those guys show up every night, and they're pros, and they're tough, and Carmelo, well, say what you ever want about him. He's a tough guy.
It would be another 15 minutes, but just again, I do think that because all matchups aren't created equally, I think Kobe has a huge mismatch in favor of the Lakers, but, Gasol is going to be banging up there in front with Kmart. And Nene. I mean, I don't know how the Lakers possibly stand a chance over seven games against that.
Well, also,
Bynum doesn't give them much. Really, you're going you're counting on Odom and Gasol to just out-talent that duo is going to be tough.
And Odom got totally psyched out by KG last year. Kmart's a whole other animal.
And is Odom expected to check Melo then? I assume he is, or Ariza switching back.
But the Lakers go small. And they throw Kmart on Odom, who's just a tough, tough, tough dude who is not going to be intimidated anybody and will just get in his face and do all the stuff that he does. I think Odom gets taken out.
Mm-hmm. And maybe Aaron Brooks makes it all moot point, and we'll be watching the great Chuck Hayes and company play.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Yeah, anyway, Dave Damashek, catch you on Damashek On Demand on Page 2 and 710ESPN.com. And as always,
a pleasure.
We went for almost 2 hours in two parts. That was fun.
That's right.
It's been a while. We had to catch up.
And I'll look forward to the 2-hour sit down to watch Roadhouse.
Yes. Let's get some feedback on that. See if the people
right,
want it. Thanks.
All right. Best wishes to yourself.
Good luck with the Pens.
Thank you.
Plug it to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.